It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. The damage caused by Typhoon Haiyan in the Tacloban region, as Richard was just reporting on the news, highlights both the enormous disparity between the emergency planning and response possible in a developing economy versus a modern high-rise city like New York. But it also emphasizes our shared vulnerability. This was especially true for New Yorkers with disabilities who were unable to evacuate before Sandy via mass transit or were trapped in their apartments without heat or water while the power was out after the storm. A federal judge ruled last week that the city was actually in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act because of its inadequate plans for those New Yorkers. To talk about the lawsuit and the possible remedies, I'm joined by Susan Duha, the executive director of the Center for Independence of the Disabled New York, or CIDNY, one of the plaintiffs in the case. And we're joined by Eric Kleinenberg, the NYU sociologist, who advocates for better social resiliency to be included with any emergency planning. He's the author of Heatwave, a Social Autopsy of Disaster in Chicago, and Going Solo, the Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. And he's working with the federal government on a rebuilding design competition. Welcome to WNYC, Susan Duha, and welcome back, Professor Kleinenberg. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Susan, I see this lawsuit was actually filed after Hurricane Irene, not Sandy. How come?
That's right. Well, after September 11th, CIDNY became heavily involved in responding to disasters and helping people personally prepare for emergencies that could occur. And when Hurricane Irene hit, we had been involved for more than a decade with New York City's emergency preparedness efforts in trying to help the city learn the lessons of September 11th and be prepared for what would occur for people with disabilities in the event of an emergency. So when Hurricane Irene came, we were part of the daily calls to do troubleshooting around disasters. And I was reporting in about the fact that on the eve of the hurricane, as it bore down on the city, I was out visiting shelters to make sure that they were operating effectively for people with disabilities, that they were accessible, that you could get in the door. And so that experience taught me a great deal about what the city had not yet learned, and taught me that it was time to appeal to the courts for a solution that we'd not been able to reach through our participation in the city planning process.
So let's crowdsource the reporting on this a little bit. Listeners in New York with disabilities, whether they're cognitive disabilities or problems with your limbs or whatever it may be, tell us something about your experience with Sandy if you think it suggests a policy change that needs to be made or a preparation that needs to be made. So you, if you're blind or if you have hearing loss or if you use a wheelchair or whatever your particular disability, you would be more prepared to either just get by after a storm like Sandy or to evacuate. 212-433-WNYC. I wonder if anybody has any stories to tell that feed the policy decisions ahead as a result of this court ruling. 212-433-9692, if you had any such experience with whatever your disability is. And the judge, we should say, didn't dictate a remedy for the city. Susan, he basically left it for the city, which means here's another welcome to Gracie Mansion gift for Bill de Blasio. Where would you like
to
start?
Yeah, the judge, in coming to his decision, reviewed 25,000 pages of exhibits and 20 city disaster plans, testimony from 35 witnesses, including experts, and came to the conclusion that the city had failed to meet the requirements of federal civil rights law. And he now has helped us to reach the phase where we discuss remedies. And so we will be turning to the bargaining table to discuss the kinds of issues that the judge cited in his decision.
What are you asking
for? And to try to focus in on remedies.
If you're going to the bargaining table, what are you asking for?
We're going to be looking at emergency plans being inclusive of the needs of people with disabilities during evacuation of high-rise buildings. New York is a vertical city, and most people live in high-rises. So evacuation planning is incredibly important. Evacuation plans rely on public transportation, and we're going to be looking at how the city can increase the accessibility of subways and other forms of transportation, taxis, but also how paratransit can be used in an emergency and how an agreement can be formed to ensure that people are not trapped in an emergency.
Professor Klein,
sheltering.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sheltering is a core aspect of emergency planning, and we're going to be asking that the city's shelter plan include programmatic and physical accessibility of shelters, that the city prefer accessible shelters over inaccessible ones, and that shelter personnel be trained on the rights of people with disabilities and their obligations to provide accommodations.
Professor Kleinenberg, I wonder what you would add as one of the leading voices for remembering social resiliency, even as we build infrastructure resiliency for future possible storms. And I know that when you studied the Chicago heat wave years ago for your book, and so many people died in that heat wave, being cut off was a huge part of the problem. Did inadequate preparations for people with disabilities come into that too?
Well, it did. And in this city, it's especially difficult because there are about 900,000 people in New York City with disabilities. That's about 10% of the population. And that would be, just those people would be about the 11th largest city in the United States. So we are not talking about a small challenge here. We're talking about a significant one. And the issue is whether we can create systems that really improve the lives of people with disabilities in New York City every day, that provide better support and connection and services for them every day, so that when we need those things to work during emergencies and extreme events, they work better. You can't just solve this problem on the fly. It has to be built into the fabric of the city.
That's absolutely correct, Eric, and I'm so glad you brought that up. A storm like Sandy brings the problems of New York City's infrastructure that can be corrected into high relief. Schools can be made accessible for students, parents, teachers, and school personnel, for example, and that would help make our shelters accessible. But it's dealing with those everyday problems that we all encounter that will really make a difference.
Let's take a phone call. Julia, a social worker in Midtown. Julia, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You had an experience during Sandy with a client?
Yes, I worked for a city-funded agency that looked after, cared for frail elderly people throughout the city. And during one of, and we're mandated to call all of our clients when there is a disaster, an emergency, to see if they're okay. But there's no mechanism to take care of them if they're not okay. There's no funding. There's no nothing. So there was a huge blizzard a couple of years ago. A 90-year-old woman called, can't get out of her house, of course, has no food, the usual story. And now what am I supposed to do? I mean, eventually I found a Domino's pizza. The guy delivered her a pizza to last her a weekend until we could get to her. I mean, there's, you know, there's no way to sort of deal with the people when you do call them and say, you know, there's a heat wave. Are you okay? You know, like, there's no funding.
Yeah.
There's no mechanism to really
look after
the vulnerable people.
Susan, go ahead.
I'm so glad that you brought this up. One of the things that's lacking in the city is the lack of a plan for canvassing buildings to find people who don't have food, water, or electricity after a disaster, and then to address those issues. And there needs to be a systematic plan not only for rapid canvassing, but for addressing the health and safety needs of people in the event of a disaster like a blizzard.
Well, you know,
I'm
the
so
thing
glad
is
you brought that up.
That history keeps repeating itself in these situations. We know in advance the people and the places that are most likely to be vulnerable during these crises. And one thing I've advocated for is for the city to have a database of people who will clearly have these needs so that they can reach out before the storm to make sure people are preparing adequately and to try to connect them to the right service providers, and then to really go into overdrive in the event of a disaster like Sandy. And unfortunately, we have to now start preparing for more and more crises like this because of climate change. It is a formidable challenge, and I do not envy the new mayor for having to take this on. But it's important because this is an area where New York City could really set a precedent. We are already pretty good at this compared to many other cities. I think it's important to make that point, and the judge did as well. But we could do a lot better, and in the process, make the city better all the time.
And I know, yeah. Professor Kleinenberg,
like
you've also looked...
with you, though.
Let me just follow up with Eric Kleinenberg, because I know when you talk about cities compared to each other that you've also looked at Rotterdam and Singapore and how they deal with flooding risks. And I wonder if social cohesion is part of their planning or, again, particular pieces of planning for people with different disabilities.
It is. And you know, we have seen that cities that invest a lot in ordinary social services and social protections fare well during disasters as well as every day. So we make a mistake if we think that these are engineering challenges only. And I think a growing number of people who work in this area recognize that it might be impossible to keep the water out. You can't keep the heat away. We just live in an age of climate extremes when we are going to get a certain amount of damaging weather. And the question then becomes, how can we protect each other as human beings, and how can we support the kinds of social programs that are really going to make the difference between life and death?
And the design contest that HUD is running, the Federal Housing and Urban Development Department, does it encompass New Yorkers of all physical capabilities explicitly?
Explicitly, there's still a lot of work to do before we see the final designs that get rolled out. But clearly, this is an issue that we've focused on. How do we make plans that protect, the most vulnerable people in the city? That includes not just people with disabilities, but also older people and people who are isolated. And the winning plans for the Rebuild by Design project will foster that kind of social protection.
Susan, go ahead.
I'd love to share with you that I have some concerns about registries, because large-scale registries are difficult to maintain because people move. Also, they assume that people are home when rescue teams come, when they may in fact be out at the doctor or church or at work or at the local diner. We're concerned that significant resources may be required, and if the registry, we're wondering if the registry is the right use when we need resources for evac chairs, transportation, and so on. We certainly agree about the resilience of communities, and we find, as people with disabilities, that we, in fact, are very resilient because we face barriers every day and we perpetually struggle with stigma. We also think we have a lot to contribute to forming resilient communities. But there are barriers to our full and equal participation in the community. They may be physical, like steps in front of storefronts or communications being inaccessible, but also stigma can prevent people with disabilities who seek help or to help others. And we need to address that in order to make a community resilient.
So look, your comments bring up for me is just how challenging and difficult this process is, and I think we have to be honest about what it will take to face up to the situation. We know, for instance, that one of the big challenges with evacuation in anticipation of a storm is that if you start to evacuate people very early, there's a pretty high risk that you will evacuate them unnecessarily, and that evacuation process will cause undue stress and potentially even health hazards. So you don't want to do it too early and unnecessarily evacuate people. At the same time, if you wait too long, it can be impossible if you don't have the right fleet of vehicles that you need to do the job well. So it is one thing to identify.
But that's why you need to plan for that in advance. As you pointed out earlier, you need to have a plan for transportation that includes relying on accessible vehicles.
Absolutely. The point I'm making is that I think we now understand all the things that have gone wrong, or many of the things that have gone wrong. And this next stage of this process, which is really identifying the solutions that we can come up with together, how we integrate the different agencies in the city that could participate in the process, the various neighborhood networks that need to be activated, and deal with questions like whether or not a registry or a list can assist the city, which I do think would be helpful. Those are going to be tough debates.
All right. The court
Indeed
rules.
They are, and we've spent more than a decade trying to assist the city with constructive solutions, and we look forward to continuing.
And more to come, yes. A court rules New York City was in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act in preparations for Sandy. There is some of what to do about it. We've been speaking with Susan Duha, the executive director of the Center for the Independence of the Disabled, New York, one of the plaintiffs in the case, and NYU's Eric Kleinenberg, author of Heatwave and most recently Going Solo. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.